When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
LMFM Sunday Sport. Your sport, your station.
You're very welcome back to LMFM Sunday Sport. David Sheehan with you until 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the first in a new series of interviews where we look back on a significant championship win for a local side. And we're going to start off with Blackhall Gael's senior football championship win in Meath in 2003. Their first and only championship win at the senior grade in the county. So Blackhall Gael's, for a little bit of background, they were formed in 1995, an amalgamation of Kilclune and Batterstown. They won the intermediate in 1998, but they were relegated back to intermediate from senior in 2001 before bouncing back at the first attempt in 2001. Dunshaughlin in the year just gone, incidentally, are the first team since then to go down to intermediate and come straight back up at the first attempt, so it's definitely not something that's easy to achieve. So back at senior grade, and in 2002 they pushed a very strong Dunshaughlin side to a replay in the quarter final. So they were showing signs at that stage that they were maybe on the brink of a breakthrough. That Dunshaughlin team, of course, that was their 3-in-a-row year in Meath, and they went on to win Leinster that year as well. It's worth noting as well that from 2003 to 2006, the Meath Senior Football Championship was comprised of two groups of eight. So the winners of the championship in those years had to play 10 games at least. That's assuming no replays, which seems extraordinary now, really, when you think about it. So with that little bit of background out of the way, let's now hear from two of the main men from that 2003 success. Paul Nestor, who was full back on the team, and the Blackhall manager at the time, Leo Turley. This is episode one of The First Time with Blackhall Gaels. So, Leo, I might start with you. Most of us of a certain age remember your tussles with Mick Lyons and that really intense Meath-Leash rivalry in the early to mid-90s. So how was it that you came to take over Blackhall, and when exactly did you become involved with the club?
When I was up against Mick Lyons, Jesus, now we're, whatever, about 20-year anniversary. That's a 30-year anniversary since the match in Navan when we beat Meath, and after they'd been in the All-Ireland final. We didn't beat them often, but that was a great day because I think we played Meath something like 5 out of 6 seasons in the 90s. It was like every year it was bloody Meath. We couldn't get a break, and we couldn't beat Meath apart from that one time. So after my career finished in about 1997, 98, I moved to Carlow, and then work brought me back up to Dublin, and I was working with a mortgage broker in town. And there was an employee in there, a guy by the name of Mick O'Malley, who Paul will know well. Mick O'Malley was working as a broker consultant in there. And we were chatting over coffee one morning. He said, my club are looking for a new manager that got relegated last year. There's a lot of young talent there. Maybe you should go and have a chat with them, because I'd already managed a couple of clubs down in Leash and in Carlow, so I had a bit of experience behind me. Blackhall Gaels had no idea where they were, even though I was living in Leixlip, which was literally 5 miles away from Kilclune. Went out, met Blackhall Gaels, and said, I'm the man for the job. I'll win the intermediate for you. We'll win the intermediate, and then we'll get back up and we'll win the senior within 2 years. Telling you that now, you've got a great bunch of lads, super players, good attitude, et cetera, et cetera. Usual phony sales pitch by a manager who wants an easy gig within 5 miles of living at home. So they put their neck on the blocks, and thanks to the man on the other line, we won an intermediate championship with more or less the last kick of a game against, I think it was Beliver in the final in Park Halton, when What's your man's name? Terrific. Seamus from Walterstown.
McCormack.
McCormack gave a penalty from about 50 yards out. And one thing I think it was Creevy that was in, it was fouled. Owen Creevy that was fouled. And one thing I always told the forwards, never move. Once you're fouled, don't get up and walk away out of the penalty spot or out of the box, because a referee will come in and clear to Jason and say, right, that's a free. And you won't get the penalty. So in fairness to Owen Creevy, he stayed put. Referee came in, gave the penalty. Paul came up, buried it. And the start of the trip was on.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously years of battling away with Mick Lyons and other fullbacks put you in the picture in terms of what to do to win a penalty, Leo. But Paul, I guess, you know, we're obviously focused on 03, but the formation of the club in 1995, was that something, we won't go into a huge amount of detail on it, but was that something that was inevitable at the time, or was it something that was a little bit strange? Obviously, you were a Batterstown man, so was that a bit of an odd one, or was it something that you felt had to happen?
Probably more natural for me, more than anything. We had played together. We played together at underage. So we played under Kilclune, Batterstown, Kilclune, all the way through underage. So it was really, really natural for me. It felt more odd that we would split after minor than anything. But I suppose back then, every parish had its own kind of tradition and that sort of stuff. Look at it, on the amalgamations, there's always difficulties. You know, you're not going to please everybody in any club over things like that. And tradition in GAA is a very strong, you know, point of view on anything that comes to the table always. But I suppose you need certain characters that see a different vision. Like, and maybe with us winning stuff at underage and winning Division Ones as this parish, this Kilclune, Batterstown area, winning Division One titles at under 16, under 17. Yes, we won three minors, but that's kind of was when amalgamation with Manalby as well in those three minor titles. So I think people around the club kind of realise that, hold on a second, we have an awful lot of young talent coming up here. Amalgamation seems on the cards. Things are getting harder and harder, you know, at Junior B level, at Junior A level. So these lads have a chance of playing at a very, very high level, and the area itself, the Kilclune Batterstown, who knows what this will bring.
Yeah.
So luckily enough, you know, it did form and the amalgamation came with ease to a lot of us younger lads.
Yeah. And looking at the, I mean, you mentioned the youth there, Leo. I'm looking at the pen picks, and hats off to your PRO or whoever looks after all this sort of information, because I was able to get the match day program on your website. And looking through the pen picks from the team that won the senior in 03, only Barry Moyles is over 30. And then you've got Stephen Nally at 29 and Mark Crampton, who I had the misfortune to get a shoulder off one time a few years ago. Didn't end too well for me. But everybody else, like looking through, like, you know, the goalkeeper Martin Whelan, 23, 20, 28, 21, 22, Moyles 26 at the time. So it was a very young team, as you said. And to go back to the intermediate victory, Paul, from your perspective, when Leo came in, did you kind of, you know, the way when managers come in, there's a little bit of a getting to know you period between managers and players. And I think if a manager is a spoofer, players will pick up on it almost the first day they meet. So clearly Leo spoofed his way into getting the job, but he obviously made an impression on you lads straight away.
No, he did. He did. Look, I would have been down probably watching those games in the 90s and I would have seen Leo as this kind of ball magnet that Mick Lyons was trying to get a grip of. And as a forward, I was there going, I'd be delighted to see this lad coming in. Now, he changed me fortunes pretty quickly and he ran me in as a defender. So that was a complete disaster for me and my forward ideas. But it really did. He seen things, I suppose, that he seen things in a few of us, and he changed a few positions, like me to be a defender. And Martin Whelan was always a sharp corner forward, and he ends up playing in goals for us. Like, so I think, you know, our idea when Leo came in, it was very exciting to have this inter-county player coming in managing lowly Black Hall. Like, the idea that I was there going, God, this is the step. This is now we're at it, kind of thing. So having somebody like that, and he didn't let us down in his ideas. He was, forefront to changes, to, really, really thinking outside the box, like moving me back, like moving Martin in. But even different players at different times could play at wing back or centre back. He was never short of those outside the box ideas, which what you want in a man as well.
And Leo, for you, when you came in, I know obviously you mentioned it earlier when you were talking to the club about taking the job on, you cited the number of young players there, and I mentioned it there looking through the pen picks. Was it your strong belief that you could win a senior within a couple of years, or were you exaggerating that slightly when you were talking to the committee members?
Well, I'd seen, like for example, when we definitely, we had seen that how Dunshaughlin, and there was a great, sorry, let me, there was a, one thing I knew about Meath football is there was a great tradition, even from Sean Boylan's days, where junior and intermediate club players were playing inter-county football. You knew that the junior and intermediate grades were strong in Meath. And like I've come to know that so well over the years. Mm. But back then with Black Hawk Gaels, what you saw in Meath were junior teams going on to win intermediate, intermediate teams going on to win senior. And I was looking at Dunshaughlin having done it. That was their first year to our second year to win a championship, and they'd come from intermediate. I think St. Pat's had succeeded, Dunboyne had succeeded. So there was a kind of a follow on. And so I was kind of going, well, Blackhall, Kilclue and Battersound, one of the biggest parishes in Meath, lots of young players. There must be that ability in the club to push on. So I was kind of going, well, if Dunshaughlin and Dunboyne can do it. And I think, Paul, one of our first training sessions, we were on the running track in Dunboyne, and I kept going on and on and on about Dunboyne winning the senior championship and Dunshaughlin winning the senior championship. And you guys knew those lads so well. And that was where I was coming from, really, because I'd be a firm believer that if your neighbours can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, go on, Paul.
Yeah, 100%. And like it would have been like, we would have got relegated on the first of the three in a row for Dunshaughlin. It definitely, drives you on to something, seeing lads that you played with or know so well, winning these sort of things. So, like, Leo was right, and he was drumming it into us. And as well as that, you want to do better than your neighbours. You go, right, they're doing it, we want to do it. And like, Leo tapped into that, and he was right, because it's always a local thing, GAA, and it'll always be that way. So, like, we really wanted to get above our neighbours, and we seen it as an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and looking at, you're back up at senior after winning the intermediate. So 2002 is your first year back, and I mean, like, you played against them, Paul, and you saw them up close, Leo. Like, that Dunshaughlin team, obviously, by virtue of the fact that they won a three in a row, they won a Leinster, they were probably still haunts them to this day, that All-Ireland semi-final that they lost as well. But they beat you in a quarter-final in 2002 after a replay as well. So, the writing was on the wall there, no?
That's not the real story. 2002 took on a different venture. You remember we said earlier about me spoofing my way into getting the Black Hawk Gaels job? Jeez, mm-hmm. I had to do the biggest sell job ever at the start of 2002 when Anthony and Barry Miles were looking to transfer, because Dunboyne were sniffing around them, and by God, did I have to do some job to get them in. And we did. And the two boys joined us. And then, of course, what happened then later on was we beat Dunshaughlin in the quarterfinal. But then they objected because Anthony had been sent off totally incorrectly in a match, I don't know, it was up in Simonstown, coincidentally.
Right.
And
yes, there was
a playoff or something like that.
And we both finished on the same points, I think, in the group. Yeah. And it needed a playoff to see who went in.
Anthony got sent off, and he got sent off in the wrong. And Dudley Farrell was the referee, and Dudley came in and said, "That's not sending off. That was wrong. I sent him off in the wrong." However, because it was a quarter-final playoff, it was in the papers, et cetera, et cetera. And we went out the next day against Dunshaughlin in Dunboyne. We played Anthony. We said, "Ah, the hell with this. We're just going to play him." There was Dunshaughlin, of course, objected. I think there was 8 weeks between that match against Dunshaughlin and the refixture. And Dunshaughlin beat us in that refixture. and they went on to win three in a row. And shall we say that that was interesting? And the chairman at the time, Michael Lillis, Mihal O'Leilish, rest in peace, was unbelievable. I mean, he would not let it lie. He said, this is going to be justice. It'll be justice. Like we've seen plenty of campaigns. I mean, if social media, Twitter and the likes were around at the time, oh man, Joe Duffy and everybody else would have had a field day.
Right. I hadn't actually realized that. I was just looking at the fixtures and the results from that year. So I'd forgotten, or like I probably hadn't known about it in the first place. So yeah, that sounded like an interesting time, Paul.
It was. And like, when things like that are going on, like nowadays, I suppose with social media, like if something like that carries on, like 3 days or something like that would explode. Like that was going on and on and on and on. Like Leo was right there. I don't know how long it was, 8 weeks. It felt like a year, like how long it was being dragged out before it was sorted, that it was going to a replay and that sort of thing. So, like, I'm not sure how the rest of the county would have felt about it, you know, delaying the whole championship, all of this. But look, like, it's mad. Like, there was an injustice done. The simplest thing was that Anthony played. The injustice was that he was sent off. He played. We won the match. You know, with all things being fair, it goes to a replay. I suppose, you know, is that the fairest thing? At the time, you know, looking back on it, they're chuckling going on to win a three in a row and win
and a Leinster
championship. That leaves some bad taste in your mouth, you know? But there would be things like that that would drive you on towards winning a championship the following year. You know, you don't have to look too far, you know, a few months later getting back into pre-season. I think there was rumours going around both villages around Kilclune, Batterstown and Dunchocklin that lads were back running the roads on Christmas Day. You know what I mean? Between the two villages, there was, you know, little stories going around. Oh, they're doing this, these are doing that. You know, so it started a kind of a friendly fire relationship between us.
and Leo, and we'll obviously look at how that revenge mission went in 2003. But just go back to what you were saying there, Leo, about persuading Barry and Anthony to sign. Can you tell us? Maybe you want to hold some of this back, but I don't know how exactly you managed to persuade them, or what was involved here in charming them to come into Blackhall rather than going to Dunboyne.
Well, I suppose the two boys had been, along with their brothers, had been in St. Paul's for a long, long time and had won a junior championship in St. Paul's. So, but I think the tide had turned a bit for St. Paul's, that it wasn't going as well for them. And I think Barry particularly wanted to play senior football before he packed it up. I think that'd be a fair assessment. To be honest, it wasn't a Shane Walsh job or anything like that. We weren't going looking for them, but they landed on our doorstep because I think they had spoken to Dunboyne, and I think between Paul's and Dunboyne, the same parish and everything else, I think it was a bit too close for comfort. And so we were the next port of call as a senior club. And to be really honest, I remember meeting them in the country club in Dunchocklin and going, lads, we've a good team, we've a good setup, we are intermediate championship champions, we're going in the right direction. It's your decision. We're more than happy to bring you in, more than happy to join us. And then I left it up to the chairman, Michael Lillis, and anyone else who was involved in that side to sort out the necessary paperwork, etc., you know?
And what a success the two of them were as well.
Indeed.
So looking at 2003... And again, I mentioned this in the introduction. This was the time when there were two groups of eight in Meath, which when you think about it now is mental stuff. But it was from 03 to 06, you had two groups of eight. So you had to play seven games to come out of your group, never mind getting to knockout stages and quarterfinals and replays and whatnot. But you came second in the group to Screen. You've played 7-1-6, lost one game in that one against Screen. I think it was 114-18 in Park Tolton. I don't know if any of the group games stand out. Obviously, you know, you get to a knockout stage then and you have a replay against St. Pat's. But I suppose we touched on it a moment ago, is that semi-final against Dunchocklin, Paul and Leo? Well, we start maybe with you, Leo. Is that the game maybe that sticks out in all the games leading up to the final, given what had happened the year before? That must have been a fairly intense game.
Well, the game that stuck out for me was we had a must-win game against Bolivar in... in Dunsany.
Mm.
And it was the same day that Laois won the Leinster. So we had not won a Leinster in 57 years. So I'm in Croke Park with my two young lads. And the Blackhall match, I made sure it was on at 7 o'clock. But I obviously, you win a Leinster, you're going, got to stay here for the celebration, see the cup being lifted. So I leave Croke Park and speed out to Dunsany. I arrive in, the boys had already kind of done their warm-up. I arrived in, and I think we won that match by a point. And
eight,
I always remember
eight,
coming
seven,
in.
Yeah.
I always remember coming, and it was a horrible match. Oh. And I always remember coming into the dressing room afterwards. I said, lads, on what should have been the greatest day of my life, seeing me county win a Leinster title for the first time, ye nearly ruined it for me. And that's all I remember from that day, apart from the match being so bad. And actually, we grew from strength from there, because really, yeah, it was in the dog days of summer in July. The championship that year went on from April until September before he got to a playoff stage. You know, we, like, forget about the split season. I remember the club month a few years ago. Like, that's the way Meath was. Once the league finished, the National League finished, you were straight into two or three rounds of championship in Meath. And then there was a gap for the inter-county championship, and then you were back at it again. And it was all over the shop at that stage. So the season was really, really drawn out. Mm. And even the leagues, like, we played two rounds of the league after we won the championship. It was mad mental stuff, you know, the length of the season, and no structure really to it at all.
Yeah, it did go on a while, I would say. And it's funny looking through the results, because Bolivar finished bottom of the group that year. They only won one game. And looking at your other results, I mean, you beat Central St. 2-11 to 2-2. You beat Simonstown in the first round. Obviously, you'd meet them again by a point. You lost the screen. You beat Dundary well. That Bolivar game is a bit of an outlier, only winning it by a point, because you beat Ballinlock fairly comfortably. You beat Gael Colmkill comfortably. So was the fact that there was so much riding on that one, Paul, was that, you know, was there a bit of nervousness in the camp, do you think?
I think sometimes what the problem with when you're coming up from maybe an intermediate, you're sure yourself and you love the big challenges, you know, playing a screen, playing a Simonstown, playing a Senchestown, you know, playing these games, it's easy to get up for.
Mm.
But then when you're playing maybe someone who might be in a similar position to you coming up from intermediate, like Bolivar, that you're not getting up enough and you're not respecting them enough and you're not going out and doing your job properly. And we haven't enough experience in the dressing room to be doing that. But like being able to receive information from Leo, like him having a cut at us there after that Bolivar game, it things like that went on in that dressing room after that a lot. Like, we were very, very honest in that dressing room. So I think we went on to play Ballinlock or someone again, and we bet them. But I think we spent about 20 minutes in dressing room afterwards, you know, having a go with each other about the chances we missed that day, and about that if we were to go to a next level, that we had to take the moments that were in front of us and not be, you know, fearing what's ahead or disrespecting ourselves or disrespecting the opponent. And just, we needed to go out and be ourselves and be true to ourselves and finish teams off if it was there to be finished off, you know, and taking the moments that came our way instead of cribbing and crying about what went wrong or we're better than them or we can be like this, so-and-so, we can be like the Dunchoklins, you know, we should be winning championship. Instead of talking about it, going out and doing it. And I have to say, like, Leo brought that to the dressing room. He brought that honesty and he brought it to training. And training was ferocious in our club. And like the dressing room was ferocious. And but because of that, we had the respect of each other the minute we took to the field with the Black Hall jersey on us.
And do you think, Paul, that you needed to learn? You've come up from intermediate. Obviously, you were relegated pretty quickly, and you're back up again. Do you think all of you as a club and as a team, because a lot of you are quite young, do you think you kind of needed to learn what it took to play at senior level? Because it's a massive step up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, we would have had inclinations of it through the old Fesh Cup as well when we were intermediate, playing senior clubs at different time and kind of saying, right, we're nearly there. And I suppose some of us young fellas, like what I said earlier, had played Division One. And I think we had thoughts in our head that this will come easy to us. But you go out and you play senior football, you don't be long about getting schooled out there. Things are not as easy as you think. You know, there's a clever lad watching you. There's a seasoned campaigner playing against you that has played senior football for 10 years, maybe. There's a club. You're playing a club with serious senior tradition. You're playing your Summerhills, your Sandstown, your Screens of the world. It's a completely different ball game, and we needed to learn our lesson along the way. And look, at I suppose, you know, it is the toughest lesson to learn is, you know, having those experiences. You know, they say that, you know, experience is the toughest teacher at all, because you only learn the lesson when it's too late. And we had that in our club, that the experience in going down. But look, it toughens you when you get that experience again, when it comes your way, when you see it coming back up to senior, and you're going, right, let's do it differently this time. And you know, as a player, when you see these things coming, how you need to adjust to them better.
Yeah. So,
and I think, sorry as well,
no, go on.
I think what we had was, we had a lot of, you mentioned the youth, but the youth weren't afraid to speak up. The likes of Tig Brosnan, Mark Ferris, Dennis Byrne, well, maybe not Dennis, but George, they weren't afraid to speak up. They would hold their own. If they saw that the older guys weren't doing it, they would say it. And I think that was, as Paul said, that was the honesty that was in the room. The whole club had a very honest opinion of itself that couple of years, where from the chairman down, it was an open door policy. If you have an issue, let us know and we'll deal with it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's, I guess, you need that in most clubs. Not all clubs have it, I guess. But just looking forward then to the, you beat St. Pat's after a replay in the quarterfinal. And then I can only imagine what the build-up must have been like for the Dunshaughlin game, because you mentioned the bit of a needle from the year before, allied with the fact that they're three in a row champions in Meath, allied to the fact that they're Leinster champions now after 2002. So, Paul, the build-up to that game, and you talked about training being ferocious, I would imagine you were absolutely straining at the leash to get out at Dunshaughlin in that semi final.
Yeah, we were. Look, I suppose you just love to see these games coming as a player. You just look forward to it so much. I think we had another distraction after the St. Pat's game. I think Nigel was sent off in that game as well. So he was going to be missing for the Dunshaughlin game. So it was like another reason. Like teams take any reason to have something to, you know, we'll do it for this and we'll do it for that. You know, these guys down the road, we'll show them Leinster champions. But like, some of it is false, but some of it does just push you to go that extra mile or go that extra percent, which, look, it is important at the end of the day. Teams will always look for the 1%. So at this stage, nowadays, teams are looking for 0.5%, never mind 1%. Yeah.
And Leo, for you in the build-up to that game, I guess go on.
Yeah, sorry.
I suppose you have to try and, you know, you don't want lads going out completely off the wall wired. You need to keep that kind of controlled aggression and that bit of composure. But yeah, how do you remember the build-up to that one?
Well, the build-up was, obviously, Nigel had got sent off in the quarterfinal. So there was your talisman, your county man. So, but what probably happened was we had to rebalance the team. We had to look at, say, well, okay, Nigel's there, so he's gone. So we've now, and he won't be playing for the county final because this is going to all happen. He got a month suspension, I think it was. So we knew, right, we're not going to have him. What do we do? And I think it was probably the first time that we actually looked at the Dunshaughlin team and said, right, 20 years ago, we were looking at matchups. Who will mark Niall Kelly? Who's going to go on Richie Keeley? Who's going to put them out of action? Like, if you neutralize Richie Keeley and keep him quiet, he's the driving force for that team. To his brothers, you know, who are we going to do? So we very much looked at, you know, Paul was a full back. So there he was on David Crimmins. So we knew Crimmins was going to be a target man. That's the way Dunshaughlin played. Paul put him in his pocket. But like, as you can see from the scoreline, what was it, 112-3-9? Great game of football. And there was very little baggage from the previous years, if you understand me, in that both teams, it was like a heavyweight fight going right down to the 15 round. Boys were, like, I mean, right up to the very end, Dunshaughlin had a chance probably to get a goal, to draw it.
Mm.
We held on. But the build-up itself, yeah, for us as a team management, it was all about the matchups and neutralising and making sure we could win those one-to-one matchups, which we pretty much did.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, Paul, for yourself, like you're marking David Crimmins, and like that Dunshocking team, as I mentioned earlier, the Keelys, you had Kenny McTighe there, you had, you know, the Gogans, you had Niall Kelly, you had Trevor Dowd. I mean, a serious team. Like, as I said, the records show they were one of the best probably ever to win Meath, and certainly one of the best in the last 20 years. So keeping David Crimmins quiet was no mean achievement.
No, it wasn't. But in fairness, I owed him one from the stinging he gave me in that replay game the year before. Like, he absolutely took me to the cleaners. And I suppose that was in my head. And I was training really hard. And I was, like, asking questions of Tadhg Brosnan at training, going, you know, you really got to push me. You really got to train hard. And I suppose when you such talent in our forward line, it did get you ready. But you are right. Like, you know what I mean? You prepare to mark these guys, David Crimmins, you know, Trevor Dowd, Martin Riley, Richie Keeley. Their forward line was just serious. And like, if you had one lad tied down, he'd be only taking you out of space to create more space for the other lads. They were such a good, talented team. And look, I suppose the 3 in a row speaks for itself, really. You know what I mean? But we really had to play to our best to beat that team.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, and obviously a huge confidence booster to not only to beat them, but to beat them without Nigel Nestor, as you mentioned there, and a springboard then into the final against the Simon Saint-Gales team that you'd beaten by a point in the opening round. But Leo, looking at that game, I mean, and maybe you can talk a little bit about the build-up to it and the nerves and everything else, but it looks like it's all over at halftime. We'll talk about maybe what was said at halftime in a moment, but the lead-up to that final, Leo, you know, you're making good on your promise to win a senior at that point, but what do you remember about the build-up? Because obviously a county final is a massive thing for any club, but for a club in their first one, it must have been really, really special.
Well, we had 2 weeks from the Dunshocking match, and in fairness, again, I'm going back to the committee, Michael Lillis, he set up a subcommittee to basically take everything away from us for the build-up to the final. We sat down with them probably on the Tuesday night after Dunshocking match, and I can recall all this because we said, right, this could be the only time we are ever in a county final. This could be the only chance we ever get to win it. Let's treat it as if these lads were going into an All-Ireland final to play for their county. And Jesus, by the following week, Richie Morris, who's the current chairman, Richie Morris was heading up this group of men. They had shirts, ties, they had a bus prepared, they had a homecoming prepared as a fail-safe. They had everything done for us. Like, I mean, Blackhall Gales went up in a bus to the match. We had a pre-match meal. Everything was lined up. But that was all we said to them on the Tuesday, this is what we want. And we never heard from them again until the Sunday morning of the county final, when we were all meeting in Batterstown. A bus was there. The lads all got their shirt and tie for afterwards. They got their new tops for wearing up to the match, all that crack. And it was a fantastic build-up. I mean, they had fantastic sponsors at the time, Tom Bailey, Thornton's, you know, the whole parish rallied together to make it a really, really special occasion. Win, lose, or draw. So then the problem was me as management, and we never mentioned another change that we had in 2003 is that we brought in Vinnie Nestor, another Nestor. So I had had Kevin Nestor as a selector for 2 years, and then, or for a year, 2 years, can't remember. And then Vinnie and Deck Mahon came in as well. Deck would have been involved with Paul's as well. So he was kind of another factor in the Moyle saga, Anthony and Barry coming across, that Deck was getting involved. And those two guys were brilliant with me. We could bounce things off each other. We could correct each other. We understood each other. And for those 2 weeks leading into the final, we just took all the pressure off the players. And really, once we got to Park Tailteann, we had only one job then to do, and that was to win it.
Yeah, and Paul, for you, the lead up to, is that kind of how you remember it as well? Do you remember being particularly nervous about it, or were you just, you know, you mentioned looking forward, you look forward to these big games. Was it more just looking forward to it rather than any kind of nervousness?
I don't think I was nervous for it, and I suppose I was more focused on not really blowing this chance that we had. Like I loved the fact, I love playing in Park Tailteann full stop. To play a final in Park Tailteann, you know, I'd done it a few times with under 18. It always just gets the blood going, and I just didn't want to miss this opportunity. You have to be really careful about days like that, especially if you reach an Everest of beating a 3-in-a-row and chocolate team, and you think that is your Everest for the year, and trying to get up again 2 weeks later to play another game and not letting yourself down. Maybe that was part and parcel to the reason why we may have started the game slowly. But, you know, I never felt that during the week. I felt that before the final that, you know, it was going well. A lot of the noise was, you know, aside. We never really heard much of it going on. It was more about the game for us and just getting out and doing the business.
Yeah, and Leo, you mentioned, Paul mentioned the slow start there. And I don't actually know, was there a strong wind or anything, but you're 1-7 to a point behind at halftime. And I remember, I think I was listening to the game on the radio or whatever, but I remember thinking to myself, well, that's all over. But what was the nature of that first half performance, do you think? Were there any conditions to be dealt with, or did you just not come out of the blocks at all?
There was a breeze blowing from the hospital end up to your man's end. There was. But it wasn't a hurricane or anything like that. The lead up to the game, as Paul said, the players were probably a little bit, they weren't nervous. They were maybe a little bit too composed, because we'd no history with Simonstown. Like if we'd played Dunshaughlin in a final, oh, it would have been all bets off. And it would have been like, as I said, as Paul said, we would have reached our Everest. This is definitely who we want to beat in the final. But we went into the Simonstown game. I wasn't complacent, but we were a little bit, maybe too lax, that everything was going according to plan here. The game itself, it was an ordinary enough first half. Simonstown got a very good goal. They just outplayed us. They were up for it. They were up for it. And we never got out of the starting blocks. I think the point we scored was from Sparky, from Mark Crampton. And I'm not sure I think he might have even fisted it over the bar. We might have had a goal chance, but it was actually, you often hear the scoreline, you know, 1-0 or 1-7 to a point or whatever it might be, and you were lucky to get a point. Like, we could easily have gone in 1-7 to no score at halftime, or more. Could have been 1-10 to no score.
More.
And
more.
It wasn't that Simonstown were blowing us away. We were kind of, the lads were in the parade singing the national anthem. They were having the crack. you know, looking at the crowd. They were still looking at the crowd at half time.
Right. So what do you say to them in the dressing room then, Leo?
Well, there was no balls being bounced or anything else. One thing we used to do in Park Alton was whichever end of the dressing rooms you had, I think we had the hospital end, and there was the dressing room beside you was always empty and spare. So you were able to go in there. So the management, we went in there, just calmed our heads, had a chat, and all the players were in the bigger dressing room at the end. And then we just called them all into that room, the other dressing room, stood them up and just basically said, is this the way you want this to finish? Is this the way you want this to end? Basically, you haven't played. You haven't done anything. Get the first score in the second half. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And Paul, sorry, yeah, what are your memories of that halftime conversation? Yeah. Or do you remember much about it?
Like, I remember the first half being under, like, so much pressure, like an endless amount of balls coming in. I remember it's like Simonstown missing a load of chances. And like, there were a good Simonstown team in that forward line. There was, like, Ned was in there, Evan Kelly, John Lunny.
Wayne.
You know, Wayne was there. Seamus Kenny was on the wing as well. Like they a lot of good forwards and two meads at midfield. And like, I remember this endless amount of ball coming in. And like, I kind of remember feeling at halftime going, can't believe we're only this far behind. I thought we could have been way further behind. And I kind of knew we had this thing in Blackhall that whatever about anything else, whatever about talents, whatever about anything else on the field, that nobody should be out fighting us. And we didn't bring that intensity to the first half. And we kind of knew, like, we were all looking at each other going, this is not us. Like, forget that it's a final. It's only a game of football. But this is not us. This is not what we do. You know, let's bring our proper intensity to the game. And like, from the second half, I think we'd have scored after about 5 seconds. And it just kind of, we just knew that just keep us the scoreboard ticking over. And like, I knew even myself and Barry Miles were talking, you know, a lot during the second half going, it's our job back here. Every time it comes down, we've got to do our job. Those guys up there, they'll do the rest if we do our job back here. And look, it did work out for us. There was a lot of luck along the way. You get decisions your way. You get, you know, you get the crowd, the momentum behind you. And to be fair to Simonstown, like, it's so hard to stop that momentum when it's coming. Like nothing could go right for them in that second half. Nothing. And like, if they had gotten a score to break our momentum at any time, there'd be a different history you'd be talking about here.
Yeah, and I mean, you said that, you mentioned that Simonstown team and how strong it was. I only bumped into Ronan McGrath before Christmas. I hope Ronan isn't listening to this. He'd be getting withdrawal. But Leo, the second half there, was there, again, it sounds like from Paul was saying, it's just that momentum. It's a gradual thing. It's not one moment. But do you remember at any point in that second half thinking, this is on now? We have a real chance here of pulling this off.
Well, we made one change at halftime in that we brought Owen Creevy on for John O'Brien. We go back another little bit. I'm not going to extend this, but Martin Whelan would have been playing the year before corner forward. Martin played corner forward in the first round against Simonstown, and John O'Brien played in goals.
Right.
So John O'Brien was a big, tall lad, 6'3", 6'4", well able. And I just came up with the idea, why don't we try midfield? Because we just needed a ball fetcher. So John played really well, played okay in the first half, but we just thought we might need a little bit more experience. And Owen Creevy was one of these guys, mid-20s, had been on, he'd been in goals for the first intermediate team, I think, Paul, that Blackhall won.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
So we had a tradition of moving goalkeepers around, whereas nowadays, the tradition of putting outfield players into goals. We were way ahead of that story. So Wheelo went in goals and was really good on the kickouts. And John O'Brien was just struggling in the first half. So we made that change. And Owen Creevy, did really well. I think he put in a couple of big hits early doors on the Mead brothers, just settled things down around there. And then Anthony started to perform, and Anthony did really well. But what he also did was it released up Stephen Alley at centre back, and Stephen then, his second half performance was top class as well. He was the captain, and by jeepers did he lead by example in that second half. His runs out, and we were running at Simonstown. We were running from deep. We were running straight at them into the defence, and we were putting them under pressure. A bit like what Paul said, it turned the tide.
And even
interesting on that, I know you're saying Martin Whelan. Like, I remember in the game, in that first half, when we were under pressure, like, I remember Martin catching a few long balls and coming out with them. It was like having an outfield player, you know, beside you, another extra defender. He was so calm on the ball. He was able to come for high balls. He was a real footballer who just happened to be in goals, and he had an excellent kick out as well, which helped against the wind in the first half. So, like, that alone was such an important thing for us that day, that switch that he was in goals. There was little things like that, but look, as I said earlier, like, we started to do our job in the second half in the backs. We had the forwards up front that we kind of knew that there's a lot of scorers up there. Maybe a bit of magic from Tighe every now and then might just come about.
And just, again, like, I feel like we could talk all day about this, but time is a little bit against us. In the 5 minutes or so that we've left, like, you get the goals in the second half, Barry McKeown, Tighe Brosnan, who was an absolutely phenomenal footballer. I always think it was unfortunate that he didn't really have much of a Mead career, Tighe. He was a class act. But the last couple of minutes, when, you know, it looks like it might be there for you, Paul, do you remember, like, the closing stages and the final whistle and what went on afterwards? Because it must have been, to win a county final any time is brilliant. To win your first one is unbelievable. To come from whatever 9 points behind at halftime as well, it must have been an absolutely unbelievable feeling to do it and to hear that final whistle.
It is. And the fact that we were dominating an awful lot of midfield, Milesy and everything, like, you weren't seeing a lot of the ball in those last 10 minutes. It was all pressure, pressure, pressure. So, like, You were beginning to feel it inside you as those moments were coming, you know, with 10 minutes to go, and you'd be feeling, oh, we have to push up here. I have to get on the next ball that comes our way. You can actually feel the momentum building. Look, you're not looking at the trophy over in the stand or anything, but you can definitely feel that, God, this is ours here. And even, like, up to the point that it was level or we went 1 point ahead, it's weird. You're a point ahead, but it feels like you're 10 points ahead. Even though the scoreboard says something different, but it feels something else in what's going on the field as a player. But look, at that stage, you're kind of going, let's see it out. Let's see it out.
And are you seeing that, Paul? Like, you talked about nothing going right for Simonstown in that second half. Are you seeing it in their body language as well, that they know that this is slipping away? Because, as you said, we've seen it so many times. It's really hard to sort of stop that. And if things aren't going right and there's a wave after wave of attack, could you see that in their body language as well?
You definitely can. And it gets you closer to a player. If a ball comes into you in the full back line, it gets you that little bit closer, thinking that if I can get a hand in here, this he'll drop this. This will go our way. Mm. And everything like that was just happening for us. So you do begin to feel it as a player, that those moments are swinging your way, and that this may be slipping away from here. We have the momentum, and look, I suppose you have to feel that as a player. You know, you have to be able to see those moments there. You have to be able to feel it. Go, right, this is our opportunity here now.
And Leo, just if I can finish with you, then what are your memories? I mean, we're looking at the photograph you have there of your young kids with the Keegan Cup after that game on the sideline in Park Dalton. How do you remember those closing moments in that game?
It was surreal, because you're kind of going, okay, we've done this now. This is brilliant. And I remember the homecomings. Again, we had the contingency plans in place where, remember, Paul, we were coming back on the bus and we had to be diverted through back around by screen and across the Bog Road to get around Dunshotland. It was an hour's traffic jam into Dunshotland with everything going back from Navan.
Dunshotland didn't block the roads near it, no?
No, I don't think so. Well, maybe. I think, you know, in the immediate aftermath, it was one of euphoria. I still remember the Simonstown manager, his name escapes me now at the moment, coming into the dressing room and how disappointed that he hadn't won the Keegan Cup because he'd won it so many times as a player with Screen. And we kind of went, yeah, thanks very much. And we let out a big roar out was when he left. So we were delighted. Blackhall Gaels were delighted as a club. Mihal Olelish was a very, very happy man. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years later, and he was definitely a very, very sad loss for Cathlune, for Batterstown, for Blackhall Gaels, for the GAA, really. He was from East Clare. I think he's the same club as the former Clare manager.
Gerlach Nan.
Yeah, that's it. And he had that utter desire and passion about doing everything correctly to win. Not any other way. And I think if I was to finish with one word about the Blackhall Gaels club and the Blackhall Gaels players and that second half performance, every one of them trusted each other. There was a huge trust there between them and they knew what they had to do. We only made one substitution at halftime. We had a panel of 30 togged out. Some lads missed out on that panel. We had so many footballers playing that summer. Simonstown made 5 subs or whatever they were allowed to make. We just trusted our players. The management trusted them. And that most importantly, the players trusted each other.
Absolutely. Listen, Leo, Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure. I feel like we could have talked for another hour or so with this, but I always find it so interesting to talk to people about these sort of things because there's so much stuff that goes on in the background. Obviously, ourselves in the media, I can research results and I can see how games went, certain games, but all those little nuggets that you guys were able to fill in about how games went and incidents in particular matches that won't be, you know, retrievable on the internet. It's always brilliant to find that information and to hear those stories. So Leo Turley, manager of Blackhall when they won in 2003, and Paul Nestor, who was fullback, converted from the forwards in 2003. Thanks so much, lads, for taking the time.
Thanks, David.
LMFM Sunday Sport. Your sport, your station.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.